From the University of Bedfordshire, we present The News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toxby.
Hello and welcome to The News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Lymington Times, read by Rory Morrison.
Rotting wooden steps leading down to the beach are to get a revamp. The zigzag steps will be replaced by wooden slats running straight down the cliff face for a much quicker and shorter route.
And our thanks to Neville Lucock for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Hugo Rifkin. And opposite them on my left, Paul Sinha and Miles Jupp. Jeremy, which Il Presidente has the motorcade factor?
Well, this is Blair, and David Miliband, rather creepily, has been trying to up Blair's chance of becoming president, saying, we needed somebody who could stop the traffic. I'll just settle for an old couple in a Morris 1000 in that case. Tony Blair is just, you know, he wants to be president of Europe, but nobody else wants him to, because Angela Merkel doesn't want him. Sarkozy's kind of ambivalent, because they're worried about the Tories getting him, because the Tories have severed all contact with mainstream conservatism to join the Latvian Nazi Party.
I was writing something in the paper about the many people who are sort of other potential presidents of Europe. Paul Rasmussen of Denmark and Herman Van Rompuy of Belgium and Jean-Claude Juncker of Luxembourg. And I just thought, I can make one of these up. No one's ever, you know, so Herman von Ribbentrop, the former Liechtensteinian education minister, is a strong contender. And I thought, I could have got that in the paper.
What about Denise Van Outen? She's got a funny comedy Benelux name, isn't she? We could have her.
To say, though, I always thought that at some point there would be a President Blair. Did you not? I mean, admittedly, I thought there'd be a military invasion involved, but other than that, it doesn't surprise me.
I suspect it's just clever thinking. He was peace envoy to the Middle East for 2 years, and he only ever turned up to the Middle East once during the whole of those 2 years. So perhaps they're thinking, using clever psychology, by being EU president, that can keep him out of Europe for the next few years.
He did say he only wants the job if it's an important role that would allow him to use the diplomatic and leadership skills that he acquired during a decade of being Prime Minister, which probably means that we're going to be at war with China by tea time.
Miliband's been very creepy, hasn't he? He said that the EU president must be someone who's well known on the world stage. And I thought, well, yes, war criminals do stick in the mind, don't they? Tony Blair has indicated that he will campaign for the job of EU president when the Lisbon Treaty is finally ratified, despite vociferous opposition from the Conservatives. The Conservatives claim that the Lisbon Treaty is unconstitutional. Well, so is William Hague's smugness, but you don't hear the rest of us banging on about it. 2 points there to Jeremy. Go. Who says keeping it in the family is too expensive a business?
OK, well, this is the sort of the expenses fuss, which you may have heard about, I believe has been going on lately. Thomas Legge, who's done his report, has said that MPs must no longer employ members of their own family. Although something he's not cracking down on is the sort of the home flipping. But the Speaker, Mr. Burko, who is himself a flipper, has decided that it's flipping okay to flip, and people who don't like flipping can flip off.
I did like all the names that are involved. I was reading a report and it said Clegg, Legge and Burko, and you thought, that surely was the beginning of Trumpton.
Quite a lot of middle-aged MPs will be quite relieved now about this thing they're not allowed to employ their wives, because I'm sure many of them rue the day when their wives said, darling, I've got a very good idea. You know you've got that young party worker researching for you. Why don't you sack her and then I can be your secretary and we can be together all the time? And now he's going to go into the bedroom at night and say, darling, bad news, I'm afraid I'm going to have to let you go. This is Ingrid. She'll be living with us from now on.
I do think, though, it's not fair. Did you see some of the spouses complaining? There was that wife of Alistair Burt, the MP. She says she's worked out a giant sort of wife swap that they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. But she becomes somebody else's.
Yes, yeah, so they'll move on. One MP, each wife will move. I think it's modelled on one of John Prescott's parties. Each wife. And some of the spouses have performed vital research. I mean, Jackie Smith's husband.
Poor old Jackie Smith. She looks like something that hasn't quite set yet.
She does, you're quite right. There's a hint of the blancmange, isn't there? Is that wonderful P.G. Woodhouse line about somebody? He appeared to have been poured into his suit and forgot to say when. There is.
What interests me about the whole thing is the MPs spent all summer going, we're going to learn from our mistakes, we're really, really sorry. I think they're completely ignorant of just how low their reputation is. And I think at next year's election, we should challenge them by putting celebrities in every one of the seats and seeing which MP can lose to the worst celebrity. I think that'd be a fantastic punishment to be beaten by Barrymore at the general election.
But don't give this away, darling, because there's a game show in this. I do not think the Miliband brothers, replaced by John and Edward, would just be...
Don't pretend you know who John and Edward are. I don't know who anybody on the wireless with pictures is.
Well, Doris Day stopped recording, I stopped listening. Sir Christopher Kelly's review of expenses will recommend that MPs are barred from employing members of their own family and claiming the cost of mortgage payments. The wife of a prominent MP said she's worried that Sir Christopher is looking for scapegoats. Up to 400 MPs employ family goats as researchers. Or office shredders. Paul, have a listen to this.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you.
That was an X Factor sort of song, wasn't it? Paul, why should you eat your greens to go green?
This is a story about Lord Nicholas Stern,
yes.
Lord of Brentford. He lost the peerage lottery there, I think it's fair to say. Lord... I don't know if you've been to Brentford Castle, it's very picturesque. Lord Nicholas Stern of Brentford is Labour, or the government's, climate change czar. So his job is to basically say things that never blame America, China, Britain or India and their industrialisation programme for global warming, but always find something else to blame. And he rather gets on my nerves, but I do my best to save the planet. I recycle. I drive only when absolutely necessary, for instance, to get from A to B. And I've never shot a baboon to satisfy nothing more than my inadequate sense of masculinity. So I do my best to try and save the planet, but it turns out that I'm a villain because I eat meat. And Lord Nicholas Stern has said that people who eat meat are responsible for destroying the planet because of the methane that farm animals produce. Well, if farm animals produce methane, I would have thought killing them off would be quite a good move.
There was a missed opportunity here because he was saying everyone should go vegetarian. But the twin problems are that people eat meat and also overpopulation. Then rather than all going vegetarian and eating vegetables, we should just eat vegetarians. And then absolutely everybody's happy.
Why does he think there'll be less methane if people start eating more vegetables? Maybe he's never been to the lavatory in a vegetarian cafe. The whole thing reeks like an asparagus quiche on the turn.
Lord Stern, an expert on the economic costs of tackling global warming, says that we should all consider going vegetarian to save the planet. In the UK, 6% of the population is vegetarian, whereas in France it's 2%. It would be more, but horses are so darn tasty. So 2 points to Paul. Miles, which diplomat has been convicted for having convictions?
This is a spying story. An Iranian gentleman working at the British Embassy in Tehran has been charged with being a spy, and there's been lots of outrage about it. People thinking he shouldn't be arrested, he shouldn't be put in jail for this, because, you know, whether or not he was spying, if he had been, it would have been for the British. And I do think that's sort of acceptable. I don't know, he was working at the embassy. I don't know if he was putting the little cameras in the Ferrero Rocher.
It's immensely flattering, this view that Iran seems to have of Britain, that we're this kind of, like, evil nation that pulls all the strings in world affairs. And actually, we're a bit rubbish. I think we should go along with it, and we should pretend this is true. Because Mugabe slags us off, but he just thinks we're all kind of feckless sexual perverts. But the Iranians think we're properly evil.
Well, they call us a little Satan.
I mean, the little's not good, but the Satan, you know, I mean, there's respect in that.
We did, in fairness, overthrow the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in the 50s. And Tony Blair was interviewed on some programme and he said, I don't understand. I mean, why do the Iranians hate us so much? Why do the Iranians hate us? And someone said, well, Mossadegh, you know. And he said, who's that? I thought, and what part of the world is it your special envoy to? Middle East. That's the East that's in the middle. You know that bit, do you?
It ought to be pointed out, this is the Ayatollah Khamenei, not to be confused with the Ayatollah Khomeini, two very, very different people. They have slightly different views on how to hang a homosexual. But the Ayatollah Khomeini is so deluded that he looks at a brilliantly organised protest that was a public relations triumph for those people that protested and thought that, well, the British government must have organised that. Has he watched the British government for the last 12 years? We can't organise a letter to be posted within a week, and he thinks that...
Probably why they were able to pick up so many dissidents. Britain did organise all the protests, but then had all the names of the protesters on one CD and left it on a bus somewhere.
I'm always quite jealous of Iran that they've got a supreme leader, because no one gets a supreme leader except for like the Iranians and the baddies and Harry Potter. And I think we should get a supreme leader as well.
You should have one of the supremes, really. Diana Ross or Cindy Birdsong.
Or a chicken supreme leader.
Love the idea of a chicken supreme.
We had a coronation chicken.
Iran has sentenced Hossein Rassam, a political analyst working for the British Embassy in Tehran, to 4 years in prison for orchestrating the mass protests that followed President Ahmadinejad's victory in the June election. Mr. Rassam has been convicted of spying, or disagreeing, as it's known in democratic countries. The Iranians were protesting about the imposition of an unfairly elected leader, and it's nice of them to be concerned, but we should really sort this brown thing out by ourselves. Of round one, the scores are that Jeremy and Hugo have got 4 points, but so too have Paul and Miles. Jeremy, which battle is no longer baffling?
Battle of Bosworth Field. I can't remember much about this because I did a degree in history and people said, well, you must know all about the kings and queens of England. I said, no, we did the civil war in Yugoslavia. But all I can remember is now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this sun of York, and all the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our stern alarms changed to many meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front, and now instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to the lascivious pleasing of a lute. But I that am rudely stamped... What's next after rudely stamped?
My kingdom for a horse!
No, it's not. That's the end.
Do you not think that the exchange of my kingdom for a horse is not a very good one? Because once you get the horse, you've got nowhere to keep it.
You should have said a horse and stabling facilities.
Exactly.
Battle of Bosworth Field. Earth-shatteringly, it's right. 2 miles further away from the information centre where out-of-work actors walk around carrying halberds and saying, verily. They got some archaeologists in who found in a field nearby lots of cannonballs and thought, well, it's probably there. Same way that archaeologists find sort of skulls and say, oh, this is the missing link, not realising it's God having a laugh with a trowel and some grouting on a beach in Dorset.
Finding cannonballs in a field doesn't mean that's where a battle took place. It could just be a load of rabbits getting tooled up against yes. some farmer.
Could be that.
Watership Black Hawk down.
But the Battle of Hastings didn't happen at Hastings either. It happened at Battle, which is a remarkable coincidence.
And 1066 happened in 1922.
It's this slipshod attitude to history that gives Nick Griffin his raison d'etre, as far as I'm concerned. He's now got a new thing to deny. Now that he knows that he can't deny the Holocaust anymore, he's going to be a Bosworth denier.
Yeah. Maybe they just tidied up afterwards and put all the cannonballs somewhere else.
OCD gay lieutenant going, oh, I'm not leaving those there. People will want to visit. After a 4-year investigation, you don't want to rush these things, archaeologists believe they found the exact location of the Battle of Bosworth. It turns out it's where the big pile of bones and armour have been lying for the last 500 years. Historians are excited because it shows that mobile artillery was used 10 years earlier than previously thought. If ever a group of people needed to get laid. The new discovery means that the Battle of Bosworth Visitor Centre is several miles from where it should be and will now be sponsored by EasyJet. Two points to Jeremy. Hugo, who has a human right to right-click?
This is the, I think, the boss of the increasingly misnamed Carphone Warehouse. which doesn't sell car phones and isn't in a warehouse and hasn't been for some years, has said that people have a human right to the internet after the nice Lord Mandelson, the closest we actually have to a supreme leader, I suppose, has said he wants internet pirates to be cut off for illegal downloads. I think we've got to find a new word for them. It's a shame to be talking about internet pirates in a week when there are actual pirates in the news, because I think people could get confused and we could end up, you know, sort of bombing the 14-year-old from next door and just cutting off the Somali's connection to TalkTalk or something. And it would be a disaster. So Lord Mandelson wants to cut off illegal downloaders, and the boss of Carphone Warehouse says it's a human right. Although it's not quite like the European Court of Human Rights saying it's a human right. It's more like a butcher saying sausages are a human right. You know, there's a sort of whiff of self-interest there.
But having your internet connection suspended isn't too bad. I mean, there's always the post.
What we need to do is allow them to download music and then remove their right to vote depending on who they've downloaded. I think that would be a progressive way forward. If you're prepared to break the law in order to listen to James Blunt, then you don't deserve human rights as far as I'm concerned.
I like the way you think, Paul. It's the way forward. Miles, are you a big computer geek?
I don't know a great deal about computers, but I do understand that Peter Mandelson, he said, people are downloading films and things like that. You know, we can't just sit back and do nothing. And he's right about that, because it takes about an hour to download a film, so you might as well make a cup of tea or read a book.
Sure, I find the whole thing a bit worrying. My neighbours, they have that wireless internet access.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Wow. And they...
Where do you live? That sounds amazing.
Yeah. But honestly, though, I don't think it works well, because they download films and my fillings tingle. There's a sort of a thing that happens.
My mother thinks that email is a thing that only exists sort of in her computer. So I'll ring her and she goes, don't send me an email, because I'm not at home. I won't be able to pick it up.
I was with an elderly friend and my mobile phone rang and she said, oh, good heavens, how did they know you were here?
I remember when telephones were actually attached to your house.
Yes, but you
which is good, because it removes the temptation of taking one into the lavatory. And then the worst thing that can happen is that they'll say, right, this is really important, get this down. Have you got a pen and paper? Paper, yes. I've got...
Okay, that is word for word the conversation we had yesterday. We used to have one telephone in the house and it was in the hall for some reason.
Yes, with a notepad in case Mr. Chamberlain rang to say that we were at war with Germany.
Internet service provider TalkTalk have threatened to launch legal action if Peter Mandelson introduces plans to cut off illegal file sharers' connections, claiming such actions are an infringement of human rights. Mandelson said there will be a proper route of appeal for those that do have their internet account suspended. All they have to do is visit www. Paul. Why is brain surgery not to be sneezed at?
I think this one landed in my lap for a reason. This is about two Indian doctors in Southampton. For those of you that don't know, I'm a qualified doctor, a qualified GP. And for those of you that are listening on the radio, I'm from a British Indian background, or the new term, I cannot trace my family back to the Ice Age. Now... This is about two very clever young men in Southampton who've pioneered a new neurosurgical technique. I will basically go into a bit of GP speak, so I'm sorry if I lose you in some of the technical jargon, but the brain is full of spongy bits, and these spongy bits have different roles. And normally, to get to that sort of stuff, they've got to basically cut through the skull and get to the different spongy bits in the brain.
Doctors are so sexy, aren't they?
Yeah. They've pioneered a new thing where they actually go through the nostrils and into the brain.
Uh-huh.
You'll be pleased to know, under general anaesthetic.
They don't go through their own nostrils, do they, into your brain?
No.
You've studied to be a doctor. Has it really taken them all these years to work out, wait a minute, there's two holes there already?
A lot of fuss about brain surgery. I mean, it's not rocket science, is it?
The ancient Egyptians used to get at the brain through the nose, but yeah, they had to take it out before they could do anything with it, yeah. And you probably couldn't do that.
Actually, I did a rather similar thing. I was plucking some nasal hairs and...
there goes your short-term memory.
Actually, no, I still can't remember my date of birth. It's completely... I believe, actually, the first patient to undergo this technique had a bit of a lucky break. She got home, she sneezed, and her surgeon's Rolex fell out. So come on, Apple, because you're a qualified doctor. In operations, do they still wire up the nose to flash red when you touch the side? Does that still...
No, it doesn't happen anymore. It's a lot more skilled than that, but there are probably surgeons who are less skilled who'd be too scared to go through such narrow apertures. And for them, I suppose, they can give patients who are long-term users of cocaine. And that'll be a much easier route into the brain.
And if you couldn't afford this operation, is there going to be an NHS... Because this is expensive, this is private. Is there going to be an NHS equivalent? Do they, I don't know, tie a piece of string to the brain and put the other end on a doorknob? And Surgeons at the Wessex Neurological Centre in Southampton have pioneered a technique to operate on the brain through the nose. The procedure is known as endonasal endoscopic skull base surgery, which I know because I have a setting for that on my Black & Decker. And I can tell you at the end of round two, the scores are that Jeremy and Hugo have got 8 points, but Paul and Miles have leapt into the lead with 9. And before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Hounslow Chronicle.
Fashionistas on a budget flocked to a celebrity dress auction on Saturday. Celebrities who dug into their wardrobes include Girls Aloud members Helen Mirren, Twiggy, Beth Ditto and Samantha Cameron.
And our thanks to Andy Elmer from Surbiton for sending us that. Jeremy, why has Cambridge gone even more blue?
Cambridge University has got a new magazine called The Tab, and it's got semi-naked women in it, and they said it's tongue-in-cheek. I think more head-in-bottom, really. But they call it Totty, which is...
Tab Totty. The latest Tab Totty is a woman called Heidi, and she says, I like to see myself as someone with brain power and boobs, which is, you know, fair enough. Not a good way to start an essay on the Reformation, but, you know...
I also like to see myself as someone with brain power and boobs, actually.
It's working for me, Hugo, I have to say.
These women that fancy themselves as Totty, I'd like to see them in the sun, because those vacuous speech bubbles that the Sun Page 3 models do, wouldn't it be great if we had some Cambridge undergraduates on Page 3 of the Sun? You know, Samantha is studying physics at Newhall College, Cambridge, and she says, I'd love to see Heisenberg's uncertainty principle having more practical applications in real life.
Actually, and I don't think it's just for young women. This may surprise the boys of the panel, but I was recently asked to pose topless. Yeah. Admittedly, it was for my mammogram, but nevertheless... It says that the Tab is also going to provide celebrity gossip from Cambridge. What celebrity gossip? Oh, look, Stephen Hawking's put a bit more air in his tyres.
He's no better than he ought to be.
There's a very confusing story in the news about Stephen Hawking earlier this year. I don't always read the papers every day. Sometimes you can get very out of the loop. And Stephen Hawking, he got ill. There was a virus he got, or something like that, and then he got the medicine and he got better. I didn't hear about the story until the point when he was starting to get better. So imagine my surprise when I opened the newspaper for the first time in a week and saw the headline, Stephen Hawking expected to make a full recovery.
Cambridge University's first online tabloid, The Tab, includes students posing as Page 3 girls under the banner Tab Totty. The Student Union Women's Officer complained that semi-naked women in provocative positions are being shoved in freshers' faces. Well, it makes a nice change from the other way around. 2 points to Jeremy. Miles, who is more than in favour of one for the road?
This is a fantastic Irish gentleman called, I believe, Matty McGrath. He was talking with a journalist or a broadcaster about driving and the problem of nervous drivers. And he says, well, if people are nervous drivers, perhaps they ought to have a little bit of a drink before they got on the road. And that would that would solve all their problems. An extraordinary attitude for someone to take. I think he might have, you know, thought it was quite a clever thing to say, and he would have been viewed with more authority if he hadn't been wearing a traffic cone on his head when he said that. But he was saying that you can become a more relaxed behind the wheel if you've had a few drinks.
They do have a fantastic attitude to drink in Ireland. I had to go to a wedding once in Dorkey, which is a beautiful little seaside town just outside Dublin, and then I also had to do a chat show the same day, and I was completely slaughtered. And normally you'd be worried if you turn up at a broadcaster and you've been drinking, you know, you'd be worried that it's all going to, you know. And I turned up in a really, really bad state about to do this chat show. And the researcher said, you're remarkably sober considering you've been to an Irish wedding.
Do you know the Irish, what used to be known as the Irish cure for a cold? Do you know what that is? Which the idea is that you get into bed with a hat and a bottle of whiskey. And what you do is you put the hat on the left-hand bedpost and then you drink till you can see it on the right. And apparently...
That's a bit of bollocks, isn't it?
Apparently that'll make you feel better in an instant. This chap, this Irish backbencher, Matty McGrath, I completely misread this, and it said the AA have criticised his advice. And I thought, now which AA is that? Because it's one of the few occasions where it could be either. In the worst news for drink drive campaigners since the invention of the drive-through pub, Irish backbencher Matty McGrath has waded into the discussion on a possible tightening of Ireland's drink driving laws by claiming that a drink might help nervous drivers. Matty McGrath followed his interview on drink driving with the comments, "You're my best friend, you are." Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Rifkin.
It's from the Alderney News, which I believe is in the place in the Channel Islands.
It is, yes.
It's one of the Channel Islands.
It's a whole island.
It's a whole island, I think.
It's from the Alderney News, which is an island in the Channel Islands.
You're so well informed, Hugo.
Thank you. Can I have a point? It says, Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in the island have been suspended. Organiser Fran Lay said the meetings have been suspended due to the fact that there are only two of us left. All the other members have decided to carry on drinking.
Mr. Jupp.
This was actually from Sky News. It was sent in by Ford Phil. I think he might be called Phil Ford, and he switched them around.
Could have been sent in by a car.
An American man who brewed coffee naked in his own kitchen is facing indecent exposure charges and could be jailed. To view this content, you need Flash and JavaScript enabled in your browser.
Look at the final score. Jeremy and Hugo have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Paul and Miles with 13. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the North Somerset Times sent to us by Ken Brown.
A machine which provides naked images of passengers is being considered by Bristol International Airport. The controversial scanner is currently being trialled at Manchester Airport. And chiefs at Bristol say they'll be watching with interest.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Hugo Rifkin, Paul Sinha and Miles Jupp. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Roderick Crooks and Gareth Gwynn, with additional material by Miriam Elia and John Luke Roberts. And the producer was Victoria Lloyd.